This is the Vet Mindworks podcast, a podcast for everyone in the veterinary profession who is interested in how our minds work and how to work with our minds. Our mission is to share ideas, methods, and skills, enabling us to find better ways of working and living. The content of this podcast is entirely based on our personal experiences and opinions, and does not represent the opinions of our employers or companies we work for. Podcast episodes may contain descriptions of difficult life situations and references to mental health challenges. We strive to ensure that all our published content is correct. However, we cannot accept responsibility for any issues that may arise from the practical application of the contents of this podcast. Hello, hello. I'm very happy to welcome you back on the Vet Mindworks podcast. I'm Petra Akter and the host for this episode, which is the last in our mini-series on personal resources. We have previously discussed attention and energy, and today we're going to look into time and time management. Before this, a few items of business. First of all, we're happy to share the news that we're now on all major podcast platforms, including Podvine. So the easiest way to ensure you don't miss any episodes is to go and subscribe to the podcast with your preferred provider. And while you're there, please don't forget to rate us as well. We now also have a Vet Mindworks podcast page on LinkedIn and on Facebook. So you can follow us there and you will be notified if we've got any new episodes. And over time, we're also planning to post some additional material on there that you might find helpful. So now we're going to talk about time and time management. And for this, we've invited veterinary anaesthetist and long-distance runner Carla Borland. I have had the privilege to previously work with Carla for many years. And when we recently met again, we got chatting about the concept of time, and she shared so many interesting personal insights that I thought she would be a great guest for this episode. As you will hear, Carla does a lot. And as I was preparing for this episode, it turned out that I had no idea about half the things that she was actually doing. And therefore, I would also just like to say that we did not invite her because we think that everybody should be able to do or even want to do as much as she does. This is not the point. In the previous episode, I mentioned that we often fall into the trap of trying to fix ourselves or aspire to things which are unrealistic. And we can sometimes try to achieve things that may not be necessary or even right for us. So what we would like to invite listeners to do is to take the bits of information that they feel is helpful in their lives. I really love the quote of the actor Bruce Lee, who once said, "Absorb what's useful, reject what's useless, and add what is essentially your own." And this is exactly what we would like listeners to do with what they hear on our podcast. Before we hear from Carla, two short editorial notes. We recorded this episode a little time ago at a point when I was recovering from a COVID infection. So you may notice that my voice is a little snuffly and croaky. Also, we had originally planned to start our series on resources with this episode on time management, but for various reasons, we decided to use it to conclude our series. So today you will hear me referring to the episodes of Attention and Energy as being planned in the future. But in fact, they've already been published. And now, without any further delay, I would like to introduce Carla Borland to you. As mentioned, Carla is a veterinary anaesthetist and long-distance runner with a really busy schedule. And for that reason, we thought it was probably best if she would introduce herself so that you could get a full understanding of all the things that she does. So, thank you so much for coming onto the show, and I'm handing over to you, Carla.
Thanks, Petra. Well, I'll try and give you a little introduction. So I work as a specialist in veterinary anaesthesia and analgesia, and I work at a private referral practice in Hampshire in the UK. And that job basically involves looking after patients that are anaesthetised or going to be sedated for procedures. And on top of that, that role also involves some teaching. So we've got our junior vets, so they're called residents and interns. We do lots of teaching with them and with the nurses that we work with. And in addition to that, anaesthesia manages the workflow for the hospital. So we're sort of the point of contact if there are emergencies or scheduling issues. And so we tend to be in charge of scheduling. So I'm really lucky in that I've got a fantastic team, and there are currently 8 of us that work together as part of the anaesthesia team. And then I have a few other roles to do with anaesthesia, so that aren't necessarily linked to my job specifically. So things I don't get paid for, but that I might do in my, in inverted commas, spare time. So I sit on a few committees, which is lovely, just as a point of contact with other anaesthetists or other specialists in the veterinary world, really. So I'm on an Association of Veterinary Anaesthetists committee, which is a great team. I also am on the British College of Veterinary Specialists team. So as part of that job, we try to promote specialist veterinary care to the general public. So to try and give them an understanding of the difference between a specialist and a general practitioner. Also then work the residents are doing throughout their residency. And again, that's a really lovely team to be part of. And then my other life outside of my anaesthesia job, I should mention as well, actually, I don't want to miss anything out. I also have sort of a sideline in that I have a role as a veterinary lecturer in veterinary anaesthesia with the University of Surrey. And I also teach on the postgraduate course for Liverpool University in anaesthesia. So mostly I do marking for Liverpool, but for Surrey, I'm actually involved in the final year teaching. So then outside of my anaesthesia stuff, I run competitively. So I run for a club called Winchester and District Athletics Club in Winchester. And I also represent Springwell, which is a club in Northern Ireland. And this year I've been selected to run for Hampshire and also to run for Northern Ireland. So my running, I would say, outside of my anaesthesia stuff is my big thing in my life. And that's my other big priority, I would say. So yeah, so that's sort of a rundown. And then in my personal life, I'm married to a lovely man called Tom. And we've got a dog called Goose, who's an English pointer. So that's my, that's the other bits of it.
That is quite impressive, I have to say. Actually, there's one thing also that I discovered in the research, that you've got a blog as well.
Yes, I do. That's really more for my running. And it's like a bit of a creative outlet. I think science and running aren't really so creative. So that's just a bit of a creative outlet for myself, really.
Yeah, no, that is great. And also the type of running that you're doing is really the long distance and enduring. So it's not actually, well, the running itself takes time just because the distance is so long, doesn't it? So that's really quite incredible what you're doing. So my first question to you really would be, what is your approach to time and time management? How do you fit it all in?
So I would say, first of all, I'm not like some perfect example of good time management. And sometimes it feels like organised chaos. So yes, I don't get it perfect all the time. Very occasionally, I have a complete disaster where I've, you know, triple booked myself somewhere. So I try not to let that happen. So there are a few things in terms of my approach. One of the things is that I've been really influenced by Oliver Berkman. So he writes a column in The Guardian and he's written this book called 4,000 Weeks. And 4,000 weeks is basically how long the average person lives for. And I think it's helped me in two aspects. The first is that there's this realization that you actually have limited time, and it's really important to sort of face up to our own mortality. So to realize that you've got a limited time to do things. And the second thing is that sometimes, because we have limited time, we aren't always able to say yes to the things that we would like to do. So sometimes things that I would like to do, or that I feel like I should do, I have to say no to. And part of that is then realizing that that's just part of the prioritization process. So for me, the job that I get paid to do every day, which is at work, is my priority, because not only do I get paid to do it so it pays the bills, but also because I've got responsibility to my team to do that job. And then I would say the second big priority for me is my running. And generally, if there's a work and running clash, then work wins out in terms of my day job. It doesn't often have a clash, but sometimes that is sort of like, so I sort of know where my priorities are. So I guess three things. Yeah. So the 4,000 weeks, you've got limited time. The second thing is that you have to say no to some things you'd like to do. And then the third thing is just the prioritization process is really important for me. I hope that's answered the question.
Yes, it has. It has. It is very logical way to look at things. And just from personal experience, I very much resonate with that concept of limited time and being aware of the fact that we only have so much and life is short. And it is important that we do the things which are important to us. So it's really great to think about it. I never thought of it in these three levels, but I think that is something very helpful. I can see that. I wonder, have you had any actual specific challenges, or have you, as you were trying to fit all this into your life, obviously one thing came after the other, and also with doing the competitive running, you obviously do quite a lot of traveling, so that is also on top of everything else. So I just wonder, as you were developing all these different activities and things, have you had any challenges that you faced or that you were able to overcome with getting better in time management? So did you have any sticking points?
Yeah, I'd say that I have daily sticking points. So as part of my role scheduling procedures for the hospital, we have constant, though I would say that, you know, I work in a great team, but there is constant conflict over what people either want us to do or expect us to do as anaesthetists in terms of procedures and how many procedures we can get through. And also anaesthesia take a very direct role in making sure that people go home on time. So also because I'm happy to stay late doesn't mean that two or three other people are happy to stay late. So I would say that that's a daily challenge. And the vast majority of issues where it hasn't gone completely to plan are due to communication. So in those instances, I would encourage the team and I encourage myself to have direct communication and to say what my concerns are and what we need, and then allow the person to come back to me. So I think sometimes I'm probably quite a direct communicator generally, but I find that that's what you need to have in a team role or communicating with lots of people. So I would say that I definitely have challenges like that. And the second thing is that with my running, I've got good support. So I have got two coaches. So I've got a coach called Tom Craggs, who's my running coach, and I've been coached by him for, you know, quite a few years now. And I have another coach called Tom Smith, who does my strength and conditioning. And both Tom Craggs and Tom Smith have an understanding of the stress and the hours that I work. So there's a lot of, there's weekly conversation about, I got home last night at 10 p.m. because I was on call and there was an emergency. I'm too tired to do my run in the morning before work. Or I'm going into an on-call weekend, so I'm available to do a run between 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. because I'm off the day before my on-call, or something like that. So I would say that I need other people to be flexible around me. And I should also say that I don't have any children, and I think that does also allow me to be much more flexible as a person. And my husband works from home, and he has a very, very busy and intense job. So he has an understanding of neither of us work 9 to 5, you know. So I think that helps in that our lives are quite flexible overall. And that sort of means that I can pack things in or, do things like that. Yeah. But yes, lots of challenges to do with time management.
Yeah, well, I can see that. I can see that there's lots of things. And also what came to my mind as you were talking about the running and fitting it in, that the time also sometimes has to do with energy in a way. And that is one of the other topics we're going to have soon, because they're a little bit interlinked, really, because you are using also your time a little bit to get the right balance in your energy. And if you are spending a lot of time on one thing, you've got less time to do something else. And whether that is an activity which is like a resting activity to allow you to recharge, or whether that is an active activity which actually makes you lose energy. So there's this constant balance, I imagine. The other thing I found very interesting is that you were talking about clear communication, which is obviously a very central skill to all our lives, and that seems quite central and important to managing time as a team effectively.
I think it also helps that we have a set purpose within the anaesthesia team I work in, and it's to provide optimal anaesthetic care for our patients, but within a sustainable working pattern. And so I think having that purpose within our team, or certainly has helped me clarify my role so that My job is to provide optimal anaesthesia and analgesia for our patients, but it also has to be sustainable. So it's got to allow me to go on to work every day. And some of that, you know, the things that support that is that my boss understands staffing issues, and I think he's able to say, okay, if we don't have enough staff to do that, then we don't do that. And I think that, so you also rely on support, because anaesthesia is a service provider, really. We provide a service to other people. It sort of relies on other people being respectful of our own time management and what we think is sustainable and isn't. And I would say that that also, yeah, it's another challenge, but to communicate that and to be supported in that. And that's particularly problematic, I think, because private practice effectively needs, you know, to be, often it's invested in by private equity companies that expect a return on their money, or shareholders. So there is a financial pressure for us to perform. But obviously at the vet level, our priorities are the patients. But we also have to do a certain amount of work in order to pay our salaries and pay for the nurses and the drugs and the equipment and the lovely facilities that we work in. So yeah, there are quite a lot of challenges from that point of view.
Yeah, it is certainly a complex world. The way you described the way you actually put that purposefully in to provide sustainable service is something I think is very important. And that is sort of, in a way, what brought the idea of this podcast as well, because we all want to do a good job. Sometimes in, well, not optimal circumstances, I think it is really important to have a degree of realism of what is achievable, and that we cannot work on 120% all the time. There needs to be a degree of striving to do an excellent job, but also the insight that this needs to be balanced so that we are able to do this day in, day out, for months and years and decades, ideally. And also, I think it links back a little bit to something that you said earlier on, which was around that you're not perfect. So even in the time management skills, there are still times when we get things wrong. And I think that is, a nice thing to be able to say off yourself and appreciate that you try to get it right, but sometimes it just doesn't happen. And then the way you phrased it, I think, sounded just very confident around this sort of concept that sometimes things just go wrong and you triple book yourself, and that is what life is like.
Yeah, I mean, a good example of this was this week. So I had a run to do on Monday. I was on call, so I started a little bit later when I'm on call, start at 10. So I had an hour's run to do, and I woke up and I remembered I had an 8 a.m. Zoom meeting. And so I was like, well, what's going to get... And actually, I was on call that evening, I didn't finish late, and my run got sacrificed. And I was annoyed with myself, because I was like, you could have got up at, you know, an hour earlier. So instead of get up at 7, I could have got up at 6 and had my run done and come back and done the meeting. But effectively, like, you know, sometimes you have to think, look on the brighter side of it. Maybe my body needed a little bit more sleep, and it is what it is. And I guess that's the other thing, is I just, you know, sent a text message to my coach and said, missed the run this morning. I'm just letting you know why. I completely forgot I had a meeting, and have I finished super late tonight? So yeah, I'm not going to be able to run. And I think also it's important for me to, there were, you know, sometimes it's tempting to get home at 9 p.m. and think, oh, I could just go out for an hour for a run. But I don't think that that's healthy, actually. I think it's better to just probably take the rest. Though I personally struggle with, I'm very goal orientated, so I like everything to be ticked off. But sometimes I have to sort of push against my own personality a bit to realise that that's actually not sustainable in the long term.
Yeah, and say no to yourself. Because I think sometimes it's easier to say no to other people than it is to say no to the things that you actually feel drawn to do.
Yeah.
Sort of leads us a little bit to my next question, because I was just wondering whether you had, just thinking about when it went wrong for you, do you have any tips and tricks of how to avoid the triple booking, and how do you manage to avoid most clashes, even though it might not always be perfect?
So I'm quite good with dates in my head. So I have a calendar that I look at every day. So I've got my paper diary, I have like a calendar diary on my laptop. And then it also for anaesthesia rota, so it's all done out as well. And I can access it via like a remote program all the time. So generally, I don't say yes to anything until I've checked my diary, usually. Most of the time I can keep my wig and it's in my head, but not always. So I'm pretty good at, you know, updating that. I have to say, like, without my diary, I'm a bit lost. So I do need it to, you know, write things down and remember what I'm supposed to be doing. The other little bits that I do is that, you know, everyone has their own way of managing their priorities. I have a flag system in my diary, so in my email. So anything in red, I have to do it, really. So this is a priority for this week. Yeah, you know, a yellow colour might be like, you've dealt with it, but you're expecting a reply, or this is sort of an ongoing, it's not resolved. And then green might be something that's ongoing, but I don't need to do anything about it. And then if it's not ongoing, it gets moved into a folder. So my inbox is either things that are going to happen or are in the midst of happening or I need to do something about. And generally that means my inbox is quite short. And then I go through my inbox pretty much every day in life and reorder. So like try to do the things, or at least sit down with my diary and think, well, if that is a red flag and I need to do that, when am I going to do that? And then I think the other thing is that I'm good at, when I've got 5 minutes or 20 minutes or 15 minutes, I'm good at getting something done in that time, I would say. So sometimes I'll only have 15 minutes of work, but I'm like, well, I could probably mark the introduction of a case report in that time, rather than saying, well, I could, you know, do something else for 15 minutes. So I guess that's quite helpful, in that I probably find it quite easy to go from one thing to the other and concentrate on the next thing. And I think actually that's an acquired skill with anaesthesia. So my job is, our sort of, one of the senior anaesthetists in our team is that we are in charge of multiple cases. So you have to sort of like be able to dip in and out and be fully present in hopefully the case that you're with. But you might be moving on to a different room or a different procedure and then having to be with that case again. So I think some of that, you know, that I've just had to develop those skills from being an anaesthetist. And the other thing, I say this, and some people find this very difficult, but I would say don't let perfect get in the way of good, which is the phrase that I really like, which is that I probably, you know, try to be good at the things I do, but I'm rarely perfect. And I probably envy that the people who can really perfect, you know, be perfect at something or really perfect something, because I'd much rather get more done and it be good. So I don't know if that's a positive or negative, but I guess that's sort of like the motto that I work towards.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. If you don't mind, I'll just recap this personally for me. You basically work with different diaries and calendar systems. So you've got a paper calendar as well as an electronic one, a private electronic one, as well as your work rota. And you don't commit to anything before checking that you're all clear on those fronts. You have a colour-coded inbox system where you mark your messages depending on actionable, non-actionable, waiting to go back, ongoing, not ongoing. Then the third thing just escaped me.
Was it about the 5 minutes, having 5 minutes to do something?
The 5 minutes, absolutely. And I so agree with it. Actually, having a list of things and being ready, knowing, oh, I've got this time, so what have I got? Just being able to quickly choose and decide what to do with that.
Yeah.
I heard somewhere that we actually do have a lot of disposable time, although we always feel time poor, but often have these time windows of where we're waiting for something, we're waiting for somebody and haven't really got anything to do in that moment. So making good use of that, I think, is a really, really good tip. It seems to work for you really well.
Yeah, yeah.
Then I really liked the way you also brought up the topic of attention, because another resource which is really central in this. So we've got the time, we've got energy we need to consider, and we've got attention. So we can only use our time really well if we're really present. And we can only do a really good job if we're present in that moment with what we are doing. And then finally, the concept of perfectionism and avoiding to trip ourselves up by aiming for perfection, which is unrealistic. And I can see what you're saying, that you admire people who can be perfect. But then on the other hand, really, how realistic is that? And if we are passionate about different things, then there's only so much time we can allocate to each activity. So I can see that if running would be all you're doing, you would probably run faster or longer.
Yeah.
And you haven't got all the time to do that. So, which comes back to the priorities. It depends really what you want in life. Yeah, so thank you for sharing those tips. I think that's really good. What are the common pitfalls and difficulties? Are there any real pitfalls, or are there occasions where excessive time management can sometimes become counterproductive?
Yes. So I would say that the thing that I don't take enough time for is recovery from my running. And that has a negative impact on my running. So I would say that I'm good at doing the running, but I'm not necessarily very good at doing the recovery. And I think that that's to my detriment. So it tends to be, there's something that stops me running. It's not necessarily that I choose to take a break. It's usually because I'm injured or I'm ill or something like that. The other thing is that I think that, you know, I grew up in a family with what I would describe as a very Protestant work ethic. And I think we live in a capitalist society, which sort of encourages you to think that, well, if you're not killing yourself, you're not working hard enough. And I think social media plays into that you see these people achieving these things, and it makes you think, why can't I achieve that? Or why have I not done that? I think that's really easy, you know, to do. And I think sometimes you have to come back to asking yourself, what are the things that I really enjoy? So what are the things that like give me, you know, real joy? So for me, my things are, it's walking my dog, often on my own early in the morning. That's really grinding. I love going for a coffee with my husband and sort of like debriefing my week, or going for a glass of wine at a bar or doing something like that. And I love seeing my friends and my family. And actually those are the things that are the things that make me who I am, but also make me feel really good. And I think often because of the society we live in, it's really easy to be like the next thing, the next thing, the next thing. And often, I guess it ties in with that 4,000 weeks really thing, that you're not going to live forever. And none of us are going to get to our deathbed and think, oh, I really wish I'd worked more. Or I really wish I'd marked more case reports or written another paper. You know, I think we'll all wish that we had spent more time outside and that we'd went for more long walks and we'd seen our friends and family more. So I think, yes, I wouldn't say that I always get the balance right. And I think if you looked at my life, you would think, what work-life balance? But yeah, so I think those are like common things that I come up against. And I guess it's about reminding yourself of your own mortality. And I think that that's really central to reminding yourself you're not going to live forever. So actually the decisions you make day to day of how you spend your time are really important.
Mm. And perhaps that can help you to, well, at least in my experience, that realization has helped me to say no more easily and actually have no problem with that. As I said, I still struggle with saying no to myself that much more. But yes, you are very right with the regrets of people. A lot of things that we would come to regret are the things around family and connection that we haven't done enough, rather than external points and the formal qualifications and things around work. Yeah, great insights. It sometimes also takes some years to actually get there, as you say, because our brains, we're so goal chasers and trying to do one thing after another. And I wonder, that's just come to my head, because there's this thing about making sure that we get lunch breaks, making sure that we get rest breaks during our working day. I think that must be the same for you as an anaesthetist, because you need to be very focused for periods of time. And in my work as a radiologist, I found it's absolutely important, because we do a lot of cognitive work in very concentrated period of time. It's very important that we get things right, that the eyes are working, that the brain is working. And therefore, I kind of included the notion of making sure that I'm resting for the patients as much as for myself. And I just thought of that when you were saying about getting enough downtime to actually get better in your running. So making sure that you recover properly before you start running again, and you will perform better. And that is, in a way, the same in our daily jobs, really. I don't know if that resonates with you.
Yes. Yeah, it definitely does. I mean, for me, the important thing is I need something to like completely take my brain away. And for me, that's reading. So I read lots of novels and I constantly have a book on the go, and I sometimes I have time and I, you know, but I read every day, even if it's only a page, and then I'm tired and I want to go to sleep. But I need something that completely moves my brain away. And for some people that might be, you know, watching The Only Way Is Essex on TV or doing something like that or going for a walk before bed. And in fact, I do that too. So we take the dog out for a walk before bed. Normally I go with my husband every evening. So that helps to sort of debrief the day. And then I come back, wash my face, brush my teeth and get into bed with a book. And sometimes I only read two pages. But I think that's, for me, it's very difficult at work to have a lunch break where someone's not trying to phone me or speak to me at the same time. That's really rare that I would eat my lunch in one go without being interrupted. And it's really rare for me to have half an hour lunch break. And I probably could take it, but I'm always aware of the impact that that might have on other people, which necessarily isn't a necessarily good thing. But I think there are probably other areas in my day where I manage to get that cognitive rest to some degree. And I would say, I do feel like, I described it recently, that sometimes I feel like my working day feels like I've been held underwater. And then you suddenly, you know, come up and you have a big breath at the end of the day. And that's what it feels. That's what my days feel like sometimes because they're so busy and so intense. And then probably my running allows me to switch off. I do reading. I see my dog. So there are things that I do to sort of recover from that. And I would say also that it's over weeks. So yes, I might have a really intense week at work and think, oh my goodness, I can't work another day. But then I'll usually have a week that's not so bad. So I would say that my balance actually just has to stretch out over weeks or months rather than days, because I find that I can't achieve that balance on a day-to-day basis or even a week-to-week basis, because sometimes it's very intense and then sometimes it's less intense. And I'm sure that's not ideal for everyone, but that's sort of how it works for me, or how I manage to sort of like remain just on the right side of sin.
Yeah, it is an uphill struggle sometimes, but it sounds like you obviously have developed a lot of self-awareness around that and very consciously put measures in place to make sure that you avoid the overwhelm. I was just wondering, coming towards the end, is there anything else around this topic that we haven't touched on or anything I should have asked you which I haven't asked?
No, I don't think so. The only other thing that I had written down was just that I try to make myself do the thing I least want to do first on my priority list. So that's the only other thing that I do, because I'm really good at dreading things, and so that's what I tend to do. I try to get the stuff that I don't really want to do out of the way, and then I can sort of like get on with the rest of it. So I don't know, that sometimes really helps other people. And also sometimes if I'm really dreading something, I just start it and say, I'm only going to do 10 minutes and then I'm going to stop. And inevitably, I don't stop at 10 minutes because actually you're sort of into it by then. But I sometimes find that with, say, like if I have to read something that's quite long or do a presentation for something, those would be the tasks that I don't relish. I try to make myself do those first. Yeah, that's the only other thing that I'd written down.
Great tips. I think it was Mark Twain who said, if your job is to eat a frog, eat the frog first thing in the morning and eat the biggest frog first, or something like that. So that's around that. I think that's a very good tip. And also just trying to break it down into smaller chunks. I think that's great suggestions. Excellent. Right. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for your time. But just before you go, if anybody's interested in you, would like to find out more about you and your activities, where can they find you? And is there anywhere you would want to direct people to?
So my blog's called whatcarladid.com, and my social media is the same. So it's whatcarladid on Instagram and Twitter, and it's Carla with a K. So whatcarladid with a K. But yeah, if anyone wants to contact me, I don't know that I'd be very helpful, but I'm always happy to chat. So yeah.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for your time, as you are clearly a very busy person. Thank you so much for your time and your insights. That's been absolutely amazing.
No problem.
So this was our episode on time and time management with Carla Borland. I don't know about you, but I think that the approach of shifting the focus away from the more traditional time management in the attempt to purely increase efficiency and instead becoming more aware of our time limitations, the importance of saying no even to things that we might be drawn to, and reducing our perfectionistic tendencies seems really appealing to me. Although this episode concludes our initial series on resource management, there is, of course, so much more to say on this subject. And there may also sometimes be more than one opinion on a specific topic. Therefore, we will come back to these subjects and many of the other associated topics as we go along over the next few months and hopefully years. As always, thank you so much for all your feedback and suggestions for guests and topics, and please keep them coming by sending an email to vetmindworks@gmail.com or by contacting us through our LinkedIn or Facebook pages. The main aim of our podcast is to offer our listeners different ideas, perspectives and resources on professional and life skills which support our performance and well-being in the veterinary profession. But is well-being really related to performance, and what are some of the key factors influencing both? This is the question that I will be discussing with our guest Dan Tipney in our next episode, and we hope that you will join us again then. Thank you for listening to the Vet Mindworks podcast. We hope that you enjoyed it and that you've found the content helpful. If this is the case, please consider sharing and rating us, as well as providing us with feedback, including suggestions for future topics and guests. This podcast is independent and self-funded, as we see it as our way to give back to and support the profession. Our support extends to our colleagues from the Ukraine, who are finding themselves going through very difficult times. If you are in a financially secure position, please consider donating to a fundraising campaign in aid of providing professional mental health support for Ukrainian veterinary colleagues. Donations for this can be made on the Galaxy Vet Foundation website, and you can find a link in the show notes. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.